With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with tens of thousands of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? It is but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God.
To be honest, I was filled with horror when Simon asked me if I'd do a short talk on my own personal experience of vocation. Vocation seems to be a word that claims quite a lot for itself, and it's not a word that I would naturally use in relation to myself or anything that I do. But being forced to review my life in the light of this concept has actually been really good for me. I'm aware that the word vocation means different things to different people, even different Christians. To some it means a very direct and clear call from God to do something very specific in his service. I definitely don't feel that I've had one of those. To others, it simply means the desire to use the gifts that God's given them in doing something that they both enjoy and are good at, in whatever sphere that may be. I feel more comfortable with this definition, but still, as I look back on my life, it doesn't quite hit the nail on the head for me, and I think there's something a little more to it than that. When I was leaving school, like many teenagers, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was good at maths, and my older brother suggested this meant I might enjoy computers. So off I went to university to do a computer science degree. It was 1979, and I'd never even seen a computer. And it turned out I was the only woman on my course. But it also turned out my brother was right. I loved it. I loved the problem-solving aspect of programming and designing, the logic, the intellectual challenge of finding the best and fastest and most elegant solution to a problem. Following my degree, I remained in the industry for over 25 years. Before we had our family, I would work long hours just because I was caught up in what I was doing. But was this ever a vocation for me? I don't think it was, though I was definitely using the gifts that God had given me, doing something that I really enjoyed. I think that's as far as it went. Looking back, I think what it lacked in terms of vocation was a sense that I was doing something intrinsically good and worthwhile. Outside of my paid work, I was doing quite a lot of voluntary stuff in the church, as many of us do. Mine was largely related to youth work, Paul and I both leading first Pathfinders and then a really large cipher group for about 15 years. Such important and valuable work, definitely something worthwhile. But did it feel like a vocation for me? It didn't really, because it never felt authentically me. I did it because it was a job in the church that needed doing, and I could do it. But if I'm honest, I often felt uncomfortable in the role, because I was expected to be more black and white about matters of faith than I really felt was true in my own life. We were in quite a conservative church at the time, and I certainly found giving cipher talks totally nerve-wracking and a real burden every week I had to do one. And then when I was in my early to mid-40s, I was asked to visit a young woman called Jo, who really changed my life. Jo was a heroin addict and an alcoholic. She had three young children who were just in the process of being removed from her care by social services. A few weeks before I met her, she had apparently wandered into our midnight mass Christmas Eve service, drunk the entire goblet of wine during communion, and then afterwards she had asked our vicar to come and exorcise her house. He went, and following that visit, he asked me if I could go and visit her. I don't know why he asked me. I was not part of the pastoral visiting team. In fact, I'd never before visited anybody on behalf of the church. And I certainly had no experience whatsoever of befriending those with addictions. As I look back on it now, it was almost as if God called him to call me, because so much snowballed from there. Over the next 7 years, I became deeply involved in Jo's life. I went with her to her drug and alcohol appointments. I supervised contact with her children. I went with her to her court appearances for her offending behavior. I got to know her friends, all in as bad a place as she was. Her mother and sister, who were not on speaking terms with her. There were many ups and downs, as you can imagine. But nothing shook my faith that there was hope for her. Towards the end of that time, for completely unrelated reasons, I went through a personal faith crisis. But somehow, despite all my doubts and confusion over doctrine that I felt I no longer understood, I never lost my faith in God's love for Jo. This whole experience opened a new world to me, one I'd known was out there but had never experienced firsthand. One of addiction, poverty, deprivation, lack of choices, powerlessness. And I realized that despite all her bad choices in life, of which there were many, it was not all Jo's fault. That she was trapped in a terrible spiral of loss and more loss that was so hard for her to escape from. The truth of the saying, "There but for the grace of God go I," weighed upon me as I compared my privileged life to hers. As I said before, whilst I was struggling with my own faith, wrestling with doubts and confusion, there was one verse that still resonated absolutely with me. It was Micah 6:8 that Jeremy's just read. "He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Around this time, a friend and I helped facilitate a course called Just People, developed by Tear Fund, to help the church reflect on issues of justice and poverty, and to think practically about how we could respond. On the back of that, we joined with six other local churches and opened a night shelter for the homeless during the winter months. And we started cooking a monthly lunch for the homeless and the marginalized. And again, became quite involved in a number of their lives and problems. All this gave me a deep sense of meaning and purpose in my life. Not that my life had seemed without purpose before, but somehow all these activities motivated me and energized and inspired me to try and do more in a way that my previous voluntary work had not. I had this sense that somehow, despite the poverty of my own faith, that what we were doing was in some small way allowing God's immense love for these people to begin to break through. I was made redundant at work, and this caused me to re-evaluate a lot of things. I realized that whilst I thoroughly enjoyed IT, it didn't imbue my life with meaning in the way that my work with Jo and the homeless did. So age 49, I went back to university to do a master's in social work. In preparation for this talk, I looked back at the personal statement I had to write for my application. It began, "I first felt called to retrain as a social worker when I was," and an interesting choice of words given the subject of this talk. I loved being a social worker, and in many ways, it did feel like I'd found my vocation. But 5 years on, I was uprooted from both my paid and voluntary social work as we moved to India for a couple of years. As you can imagine, there were plenty of opportunities to work for social justice there, though it took a while to find them due to cultural and language barriers. And then we came from India to here. Quite a contrast from urban, dirty, noisy, overpopulated Bangalore to the beautiful, green and peaceful, affluent English village of Brockenhurst. But for the first year or so here, I felt quite lost. I didn't know what my purpose was, I guess I had lost my vocation, though I didn't use this terminology at all. Paul had retired and was keen to sail and take extended holidays, so a full-time job for me wasn't the right thing for us as a couple. The only local social need I could see here in Brockenhurst was that of the elderly, and it seemed like this was already so well covered by Brock Care and the like. I tried a couple of voluntary roles in Southampton, working with the local drug and alcohol team there, but nothing stuck. Then I found the part-time work that I currently do as a registered intermediary, and this really helped. And then at the back end of 2019, I met Annabel Meller, a member of the St. Anne's Catholic Church. We discovered a joint concern about climate change. Annabel was much further down the road than me. She was an experienced climate activist, and more importantly, she had already made the vital link between her faith and climate justice. This was an eye-opener to me. I'd always thought climate change was a secular issue, nothing really to do with my faith or social justice. But Annabel helped me to realise this was not so. She had started up a group called Creation Care in the Catholic Church. She inspired me, and I realised that working to combat climate change was all part of Micah's call to act justly and to love mercy. It's the poor who are already suffering the devastating effects that our throwaway lifestyles have on the environment. And so I got involved with Eco Church, and Greener Brockenhurst was born. It takes loads of my time. But again, just as when I was working with Joe and the homeless, it gives me a real sense of doing something worthwhile and of purpose. I believe God has given me a heart for it that means it's a motivator in my life, not a drain. As I said at the start of this talk, I'm not used to thinking in terms of vocation, but it has been good to be made to do so. God knows each one of us and loves us. He knows what makes us tick and what makes us happy, what motivates us and what imbues our life with meaning. These things will be different for everyone. But for me, I realise it is in some way related to issues of social justice, to caring for the powerless and those who have no voice, and who are victims in the widest sense of the word. And as time has passed and my situation and circumstances have changed, the practical outworking of this vocation has been very different, from befriending Joe to climate activism. But what's at the heart of it remains the same. And I realise we have to adapt and be open to new opportunities and needs as life changes and moves on. And it's also made me realise that actually, although I never heard God speak directly to me saying, love the poor, or fight for justice, or protect my creation, that message is there every time I open the Bible and read of God's love for the oppressed and the powerless. But it took people around me to show me the specific way for me in my day-to-day ordinary life. My old vicar asking me to visit Jo herself, and Annabel, to name but a few. And I'm so grateful to God for giving me those people and for drawing me to this work. Because, as he so well knows, it's given me and continues to give me a great sense of fulfillment. Doing this talk has helped me realise that God has maybe had a bigger hand in what I have done and what I am currently doing than I have previously dared to give him credit for. Thank you.